Mini episode 698 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge, mini episode number 698. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris. We have a tremendous conversation coming your way today with two of our favorite media professionals. We've got on the phone lines here. First, my good friend, longtime FDH Lounge dignitary, Simon Applebaum of Media Village. And you can, of course, find on the FDH Lounge Ultimate Links page, you can find the direct link to his Tomorrow Will Be Televised blog. But you can also, of course, find that on Media Village as well. Another gentleman from Media Village joining us here today, who we've also had on the show in the past, longtime New York Times columnist Stuart Elliott. And, of course, his beat has long been the advertising industry, covering that as it intersects with television. Simon's beat, of course, has been the intersection of television and technology with his Tomorrow Will Be Televised brand. So it's a pleasure to get both of them on the show. We first have on the phone lines here my good friend Simon Applebaum. Simon, welcome back to the program, my friend. It's good to have you on.
It's good to be back with you, Rick. And, of course, Happy New Year plus almost 2 months. Better late to welcome you to the new year than ever.
It's Happy New Year to you, too, my friend. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. Always a pleasure, of course, to bring on as well Stuart Elliott, now also under the same banner there at Media Village. And I had remarked off-air, Stuart, I didn't realize you and Simon were both now under the banner over there. Pleasure to have you on, as always, Stuart.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I'd like to start with you, Stuart, because of a column that you have. I know we're going to be focusing here largely on the aftermath and the fallout of Super Bowl 50, as well as a couple of other media stories that you guys find interesting right now, because it is a really intriguing time on the calendar here as we are just leading up in a couple of months to the upfronts. But something that kind of ties in a little bit, I got a little bit of a sense of perhaps synergy with the thought of the Super Bowl as I was reading your column previewing the Oscars and how they're trying to navigate their way through the controversy this year about the alleged racial disparity with nominations. And you were talking about the box office success, or lack thereof, as it were, of the top movies for this. Is there in any way any kind of a parallel between, as we look at the Super Bowl, we have been used in recent years to seeing record ratings? It's happened a couple of different times, but you got the sense coming in with Denver and Carolina, it may not necessarily be so when you look at not only just the media markets, but the brands of the two teams. Is there any kind of correlation to what you were writing about as far as the box office success of top movies at the Oscars?
Well, the Super Bowl generally does not respond or fluctuate, I should say, very much from year to year based on the teams that are playing. The Super Bowl has sort of become an unofficial national American midwinter holiday, and sometimes you may get somewhat higher ratings if a well-known team like the New York Giants or the Dallas Cowboys are playing, but it's not as if people are going to cancel their Super Bowl parties because the Carolina Panthers were playing. I know the at the end of the day, the ratings for the Super Bowl were the third highest ever, instead of breaking a record the way the Super Bowl has the last two or three years. But, hey, the third highest ratings in the history of television is nothing to sneeze at.
Right.
On the other hand, the Oscars, the viewership does seem to rise and fall based on the popularity with the public with the movies that are nominated for Best Picture, and maybe to some lesser degree the familiarity that the public has with the actors and actresses who are nominated for the acting Oscars. So given the fact that this year the eight nominees for Best Picture are not filled with, I mean, they're great movies, many of them, but they're not super hot, super popular at the box office the way, say, Titanic was when it was nominated. And I think that Oscar broadcast got record ratings or the highest ratings in many, many years.
Well, you know, it's kind of funny because when you look at the correlation here with the two events and whatever there may be or may not be, particularly with the Super Bowl as far as who's in it, I go back to a couple of years ago on the show. This was kind of amusing, the lead up to the Super Bowl between the Packers and the Steelers. An argument on the show with our good friend and noted large market sycophant Lloyd Carroll, I say that lovingly, who tried to tell me that had the Bears and the Jets been in the Super Bowl, it would have been monster ratings. But, oh, it's not going to happen with the Packers and the Steelers. And I said, those are huge national brands. It's going to be huge. And it turned out to be the biggest ratings ever up until that time. Whereupon afterwards, off air, Lloyd insisted to me that it still would have been bigger if it was the Bears and the Jets. So God love Lloyd. He is consistent in all ways. I want to get your thoughts on this, Simon, before we really get into the Super Bowl, because I know that the issue of these Oscar nominations, you're always somebody that I look to as far as hearing takes on diversity and how that is being received out there in the populace. So I know you have some thoughts on the controversy that Chris Rock and everyone is facing this weekend.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see how the ratings are going to go with ABC on Sunday night because of the controversy. And what Chris Rock is going to say, I think, is going to attract a lot of attention. And what he doesn't say is going to attract a lot of attention. Also, the fact that you have an African-American woman who leads the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Science, Sheryl Boone Isaacs, the action she's already taken to try to balance the membership more toward women and people of color will be interesting, too. But I think two things are going to come out. Number one, I'm curious to see what the impact of the controversy is going to have on the show and the ratings. One of the things that ABC has to deal with is that the Oscar show itself is among the four major award ceremonies, the Grammys, the Tonys, and the Emmys, now has the rep of being the worst produced, in that the show runs very long, particularly for East Coast viewers. The show starts later than the other award shows. It starts at 8:30 rather than 8 o'clock, which I think is a major mistake on their part. And it still has this reputation of the folks in charge, no matter who's in charge, don't know what they're doing, whether it is not doing enough with the host, whether it is portraying themselves in a bad light, not showcasing the medium itself, et cetera, et cetera. So it'll be interesting to see how diversity plays in the overall tone of the show. But something else I think that's going to go on is I think this controversy is going to have an unusual effect of accelerating the efforts to get more women and more people and women of color into television. I had a great conversation on our show, Tomorrow Televised, last Monday, President's Day, with Mark Morrell, the head of the National Urban League, and he's definitely going to approach the Hollywood studios to tie the Oscar situation in with encouraging more diversity on television. And in the last week, we've heard of a number of interesting initiatives by various individuals and organizations to get more people of color and women into the television process. John Abnett and Rodrigo Garcia, two very well-known television producer directors. They do the Wix channel for YouTube. They've done stuff for HBO and other places. They have a new project now called Made by Women, where they're partnering with five women directors to get up-and-coming directing talent mentored and perhaps get the shows that they want to do on the air. And you may have heard that Ryan Murphy, the creator of shows like American Horror Story and American Crime Story on FX, is setting up a new foundation called HAP, where he wants, by the end of this year, all of his episodes of his shows to be directed either by women or people of color. So I think that one of the backlashes, if you will, maybe a good backlash for the Oscars this year, is going to be an acceleration in terms of individual and group ventures to get more women and people of color into television.
Well, that's interesting. That will play into a trend that's already there, and as you said, perhaps accelerate that. That's definitely a big story to keep an eye on. Stuart, turning back to the game and the aftermath of it, I swear to you, not every question I ask you is going to be an analogy or a comparison or whatever, but you yourself drew a point of comparison in the column that you wrote as far as the game itself kind of leaving you thinking, was that all there was to it, which I think a lot of us felt watching that game and the commercials as well. And you know, that game, probably the best comment that I saw about it on Twitter was somebody commenting that it was like a Thursday night game disguised as Super Bowl 50, because it had all the sloppiness of a midweek game and as I've long said, just because a game is close doesn't necessarily mean it's good, and that's a game I'll point to for a long time as an example of it. But the commercials themselves, although this is not the first time I've walked away the last couple of years thinking that they were a little bit of a letdown, there were some memorable moments, but again, I sort of felt there was a mirror there between the experience of watching the game and the interruptions of the game in the form of the commercials. So talk about that a little bit from your perspective.
Yeah, well, the column that I did for Media Village after the Super Bowl talking about the commercials, I said the whole experience left a whole lot to be desired, and I think people have, in as the days have passed, I think more and more people agree that the output that the industry showcased on Super Bowl Sunday this year was particularly disappointing and very forgettable. I think that for whatever reason, the commercials really, there weren't very many breakthroughs. There weren't very many outstanding spots. There was a lot of kind of playing it safe and taking it easy, and tons of celebrities, which is usually a tactic that advertisers use when they're worried that they don't have anything else to say, so that they bring a famous face in to front the commercial. And in a lot of cases, the celebrities really didn't seem to match the what the commercials were saying or trying to convince people to buy. There's a lot of backlash to those prescription drug commercials in the game. People were really taken aback by that, I thought. Last year, after so many serious and downbeat commercials, there was kind of a feeling that, oh, for 2016, the game was going to be filled with fun, upbeat, positive, enjoyable commercials. And then these giant buzzkills kept coming up unexpectedly. I think there were three of them that really brought people down, and was very disappointing to a lot of viewers, and not only in the industry but the general public. It was I think it's widely felt that there really isn't a place in the Super Bowl for those kind of prescription drug ads with their sad messages and the comical reading of the side effects and all of that stuff. And I think that really helped contribute to a feeling that the Madison Avenue had really let the public down this year when it came to the Super Bowl ads.
Let me just ask you a quick follow-up on that, Stuart, because what you're talking about there, it kind of puts me in mind here, and I guess this is sort of a comparison as well. Keep coming back to this, but one of our FDH Lounge dignitaries, Tony Mazur, is breaking into stand-up comedy and doing very well thus far. I do know that from hearing him talk about these kinds of things, being in a showcase, it's very important who you're following. It's very important that you're not following somebody that just killed the room. So what I'm kind of wondering with that in mind, are there ever any complaints that come in from any of the companies that, again, these are the most expensive commercials of the year, where they might be dialing somebody on Monday and saying, hey, thanks for putting us after those guys? Does that ever kind of tend to happen with some of the commercials that are really top hand?
Well, I think I think that the networks, as they lay out the cadence and timing of the spots, that they do consult with the advertisers to make sure that everybody is copacetic in terms of what pod they're in and who's their lead in and their lead out. And I imagine the more you pay for your commercial, probably the more consultation you get from the network that's broadcasting the game. I know that there have been previous instances where there were these unfortunate situations where a couple of commercials in the same pod both had similar creative approaches or similar punchlines, and that was a real problem for the advertiser who came second in that pod. The most notable example was several years ago. There was a pod of, like, I think three spots, two of which the punchlines were about men not wearing pants. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you could the odds probably are like a million to one that happened, but it did. And I believe that the advertiser that came, whose joke was second of the two, I think, got some sort of make-good time from the network that broadcast the Super Bowl that year as a sort of an apology for them not screening the spots closely enough to notice that there were going to be two out of the three spots in a pod were going to have the same premise to them.
Well, that's very interesting about the pods. It's always a good moment on this show when I get to say, man, am I glad I asked that question, because, again, to all of us laymen out there, we don't really know about these kinds of things, but the X's and O's are very interesting when you explain them, so that these things don't happen by chance. And I can see upon reflection why they wouldn't happen by chance for the amount of money that everybody's spending on these things, but nevertheless, that is interesting to be educated about. I want to get your thoughts on this, Simon, both from a TV and a technology perspective, because, again, the Super Bowl is, if not the biggest second screen experience of the year, it's got to be very close, because it is that one thing that binds us every year. So your thoughts about how the day was digested by everyone. Again, a game that probably didn't live up to most people's expectations, commercials that probably didn't either, and something that the NFL had been building up for an entire year, Super Bowl 50, such that they were shaming the Oakland Raiders for not painting the gold L or the gold 50 at the 50-yard line there. They've been making a year-long attempt to hype this and have every team in the league hype this. And curious about what you think about how the day turned out.
Well, first of all, I think the CBS, which ran Super Bowl 50, held up their end of the bargain. I thought that Jim Nance and Phil Simms and everybody involved did a great job. I thought the graphics were marvelous. They were understandable. They weren't splashing on the viewer like every 2 seconds. They left a lot of breathing room. So I give credit to the technical crew at CBS. I think they held up their end of the bargain. The teams obviously did not. It was a very sloppy offensive game. When you consider that there were very few touchdowns scored offensively as well as defense, it was a great defensive game. It was like who had the better defense, and Denver ended up doing so at the critical moments. I agree with Stuart, the commercials were awful. There was nothing memorable. I thought more memorable was Westwood One's radio coverage. Kevin Harlan, Boomer Esiason, and Dan Fouts, three people in the booth, I thought gave you the game as visually as they did on an audio side of things. And Westwood One, by the way, radio coverage, I think is terrific, the NFL. If you don't hear it, I think they did a marvelous job from start to finish throughout the season. The quality of announcers, the quality of the and some of the advertising is very memorable. For example, the Granger spots, for the ones that get it done. They are always worth listening to. They're a lot of fun. But something else that CBS did, which was very memorable, was they had Spanish language coverage on ESPN Deportes. As you know, for the last couple of years, we've had the Super Bowl live simulcast in Spanish. First was Fox Deportes 2 years ago. Then on February 1st last year was NBC Universo, formerly Mundos. But there was a little problem this year because in those two cases, the Spanish language network had an English language equivalent to use. Fox Deportes with Fox, and NBC Universo with NBC. CBS didn't have that. And in the story that I'm going to be filed, I just filed, it will hopefully be on before the other week in Media Village, we found out that ESPN Deportes got the game because CBS gave them the call, prodded by the NFL. The NFL wanted a Spanish language player. CBS reached out to ESPN Deportes first. ESPN grabbed it, and to their credit, they did a really terrific job. About 500,000 viewers watched it in Spanish, and it might open the door for more partnerships for CBS in terms of Spanish language coverage. And certainly with the NFL, now they have half the Thursday Night Football package, and they still have the Sunday afternoon games. That may be the next breakthrough in terms of Spanish language coverage of the NFL, which has been growing over the last few years. So I think the ESPN move was great. And credit CBS for reaching out beyond their own borders and reaching out to the competition, if you will, in this case ESPN, and providing Spanish language viewers who want to see the game in Spanish with the game.
Well, once again, that's another nugget right there that I was unaware of. I did not know about the ESPN Deportes angle or how it came to be. So I'm very glad you illustrated that. And let me ask you a follow-up, Simon, because there was when you talk about these alternate forms of covering the game during the day, something that I thought turned out to be, as they say, all hat and no cattle. I checked out a few times surreptitiously at my Super Bowl party. The Key and Peele alternate coverage, or what was supposed to be alternate coverage online, and found that it was basically just, from my perspective anyways, a prolonged joke about what they couldn't do as opposed to making any kind of clever references to what was going on with the game. And not to put too fine a point on it, but kind of fraudulent as far as what I was expecting it to be and the sort of subversive way they seemed to be indicating there was going to be alternate coverage of the game. Did you get a chance to check out any of it? Regardless of whether you did or not, I know you've heard about it and must have some thoughts.
I didn't because I was basically going back and forth between CBS and Westwood One. But Bravo and Key and Peele for going for it. It's great to see alternative. I mean, there were some alternatives in terms of some original programs of the cable networks. But Bravo and Key and Peele, and I love them. I'm sorry their Comedy Central show has come to an end, and I hope to do something new in television soon because they're two incredibly bright and funny and on-the-mark, perceptive satirists. Incidentally, it's 20 minutes, and we haven't mentioned the halftime show yet. So I'll go for it. I thought it was a very interesting halftime show, and people are still talking about what Beyonce did and Bruno Mars did. It was a nice mix of talent. Coldplay came off pretty good, and everyone's still talking about Beyonce and the Black Panther song. So on that level, it was successful. That was one of the few successful things beyond the game.
A little bit of as people noted on Twitter, up with people, kind of throwback to the 70s at a part of the halftime show. Stuart, what were your thoughts on the halftime show, how it was received, and also any thoughts you might have on Key and Peele?
I wanted to circle back to Key and Peele for a minute. This was a stunt
sure.
they were doing connected with Squarespace, being
yes.
an advertiser in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a commercial during the game that promoted their alternative coverage. The problem was is that legally, of course, they're not allowed to reference or show anything that was going on during the game because that's just how the NFL rules are. So the whole point of the gag was that they were going to be online for that entire time the game was on and had to come up with some kind of original material that did not reference anything going on in the game, or they couldn't be perceived as covering the game because obviously the NFL gave the rights to CBS to do that. So what they were left with was this idea that, well, they had to talk about other things. And I guess from what you saw, you weren't happy with that.
Well, I'm fans of theirs, and again, maybe I fell for the gag. I wasn't expecting any kind of legitimate alternative play-by-play. I'm not that
right,
naive.
Right, because legally they
yeah.
were not entitled to do that. They could have been
right.
fined. The NFL could have shut the whole thing down if they did that. So by
right,
definition,
right.
it was going to have to be some sort of very meta kind of a gag for the entire period of time that they were covering a football game that they couldn't cover.
Well, and I used to know a couple of dummies that did that covering Cleveland Browns games alternatively online. So, yeah, I'm well aware of, you know, of all of that. So I wasn't expecting any kind of large-scale alternative play-by-play. I was expecting a little bit more as far as oblique references to things happening on the field. There wasn't, to my notion, when I was popping in and out, even that. So it was, again,
I guess they were being very cautious about that because, again, they could have gotten their heads handed to them by the NFL if they did that.
Right, right. And that's where,
and it wasn't
again,
the guerrilla, and it wasn't a guerrilla stunt because it was tied in with the Squarespace advertisement during the Super Bowl. So Squarespace was doing this on the up and up with the NFL and with CBS. So unlike, say, years ago when Fox used to do that alternative program that they used to run during the halftime show of the Super Bowl. Do you remember that in the years before Fox was
the Living Color? Oh yes, the Living Color one.
Yeah.
That is a classic.
That was completely 100% guerrilla content where they were thumbing their nose at the NFL. The Living Color special would come on exactly when the halftime show was starting on the Super Bowl and then would end when the game was resuming. But then once Fox joined the NFL party by paying the money to broadcast the games, they killed that immediately.
Well, before we talk more about halftime, let me ask a follow-up on this, and I'll start with you, Stuart, since you're the one that brought it up, because that was a topic of conversation at the Super Bowl party I was at, because I'd say I've watched them all. There was Celebrity Deathmatch another year. There was also on MTV the 1 year, the Rock and Mick Foley, a WWF championship match at halftime. On and on it goes. There were a number of counter promotions We don't see that anymore. Is this the long arm of the NFL that there are so many major media conglomerates that they're in bed with now that the NFL can say, hey, you know, if you want to be a rights holder on the next contract, you won't have one of your channels do something like this?
I think that's the answer. Yes, that's the answer.
Okay.
And I don't think the NFL is nefarious about it. I think the network corporate owners gladly agree to forego this guerrilla programming if they get in bed with the NFL officially because of the power of the NFL content to draw viewers. So it's not a matter of the NFL saying, oh, you know, if you're going to broadcast our game, you must stop broadcasting
right.
these silly programs. The people who are broadcasting the silly programs like Fox did gladly give it up once they can come in under the tent. And, you know, the power of live television these days, as the as all of these award shows and the Super Bowl and the championship playoffs and Grease Live. I mean, we've had the Grammys. We've had six or seven really strong shows so far this year that have demonstrated the power of live TV to be the practically only thing that some people will watch anymore. And, you know, the ratings for the Grammys weren't that hot. And like I said, the Super Bowl was only the third largest Super Bowl of all time instead of the first, breaking a record there. But in the aggregate, the advertisers got billions and billions of eyeballs if you combine the two championship games, the Grease Live, the Super Bowl, the Grammys, and the Oscars coming up. And I think there's one more I'm probably forgetting. But that's a pretty powerful play. And I think Kantar Media listed the other day some of the advertisers. There's about a half a dozen major advertisers that advertise on the Golden Globes. That was the other live show we've had this month, this year
right.
so far. So there are like half a dozen big advertisers who advertised on the Grammys, the Super Bowl, the Golden Globes, and also they're going to be in the Oscars. So there's a lot of money being spent on live TV these last 2 months.
Absolutely. And, a lot of money,
Rick,
a lot of exposure.
Yeah, and Rick, I think it's interesting that while we don't have guerrilla programming on the Super Bowl, you will have it Sunday night in the Oscars, because AMC is going to run an original episode of Walking Dead, HBO will have an original episode of Vinyl, Showtime will have an episode of Billions, which is their newest hit. So it'll be interesting to see over that 9 to 10 o'clock hour how much audience is not watching the Oscars on those other networks. And I totally agree with Rick. One of the big stories of this season has been more live programming than ever before. And Grease Live is one of the year's best shows. What Thomas Kalee and Alex Winitsky did in directing that program is a masterclass of how you adapt a Broadway musical and a film all at the same time into a live television show. What they did on that program is going to win them dozens of Emmy Awards, I think, this fall. And finally, Alex Winitsky, who is the best live television director of dance, namely with Dancing with the Stars, who has been for so long denied an Emmy nomination, because of no reality competition in the directing category. Dancing with the Stars should be a variety show, not a reality show, a reality competition. For Grease 5, he may finally get that Emmy nomination. I think I'm going to go right up on the record now. I think he'll win. It was an extraordinary directing job, given what they had to do, given that entire Warner Brothers lot. It was raining outside. Just for that Jesse J opening alone, singing the title song for 3.5 minutes with one camera, no cuts, was absolutely remarkable. Just a tremendous show by everyone all around.
Oh, sure. Sure. You know, when you're talking live programming again through the course of this TV season, I have not been shy about it every opportunity, putting over Undateable because of the very great Rick Glassman being the nephew of one of our show contributors, Bob Glassman. And so I'm hopeful of that show getting picked up for another year. But I want to circle back around, Stuart, to the Super Bowl halftime, which I started to get into a little bit with Simon, got his thoughts on it. I'd like to get your thoughts on it. The reactions that I was seeing on Twitter were, I would say, decidedly mixed. I didn't see a preponderance of people either praising it or burying it, albeit those who felt one way or another did seem to feel strongly. There didn't seem to be a whole lot of middle ground out there. What were your thoughts on it?
Well, that's what social media. That's what social media is. It's nothing but people feeling strongly.
That's right.
There's no middle ground in social media. I really don't pay attention to the halftime show other than there's a sort of a recent phenomenon the last several years where there never used to be commercials during the halftime show except from the sponsor of the halftime show. But in the last 3 or 4 years, there are now some advertisers who will run their spots during the show, usually obviously before and after the actual show itself. And that's sort of an interesting thing. I think one of the Jeep commercials, that was one of the very few spots during the game that people liked, that was came during the halftime show. So that's my angle on it, because I did notice on Twitter that there were enormous numbers of people saying that Beyonce was really good and Bruno Mars was really good, but they thought Coldplay was kind of big-footed by the other two acts, even though they were supposed to be, I guess, the bill. They got the billing, but the guest stars ran away with the show. But again, that really isn't my bailiwick, and I couldn't really speak to the to any degree other than this idea that there's now commercials popping up during that period of time where it used to be just the halftime show.
Sure. I saw a lot of the same kind of thing of people thinking that the so-called headliners were kind of overshadowed. Your point to me is very well taken. I suppose one shouldn't go on Twitter expecting a lot of thumbs in the middle takes in the middle of the Super Bowl halftime show. You're not going to get that. But in terms of coming out of the Super Bowl and looking at a development that figures to affect advertising and marketing for a good long period to come, surrounding one of what has been one of America's most marketable athletes. I will start with you on this, Simon, the kind of shock coming out of the Super Bowl. And again, as I had tweeted at the time, you know, it's not exactly the same thing with Peyton Manning getting the happy send-off as a Bronco that John Elway had, because John Elway actually played pretty heroically. As a Browns fan, I'm not a fan of John Elway, but I have to give the devil his due. Versus Peyton Manning kind of limping to the finish line. But notwithstanding that, he looked like he was going to have, for as far as the eye can see, a prolonged period of time as one of America's most beloved and marketable athletes, and caught in the crossfire almost on this Cam Newton controversy afterwards, and people having critical takes on his sportsmanship and a losing performance. All of a sudden, Peyton Manning's past history gets brought into this, and it's something where, again, I think there are a lot of people that are having the kind of mixed sense on this that I am of not being able to condone what he did, if indeed that's the way it went down, and all the details thus far don't look very good, but being a little bit troubled as far as how it came to pass and why it was dug up, and that it would seem to be dug up as a reaction to what happened with Cam Newton. So I'm curious in terms of how you think it is going to surround his image from here on in, because, again, there are few, if any, athletes in this country that have been more marketable than him.
Well, if sports talk radio in New York is indication of the feeling around the country, you get the sense that Peyton will wipe this off very, very quick. It's not sticking. Manning seems to have a bit of a Teflon side to him. The Out of Here America story, which is a very interesting story that could have done some damage, didn't. Manning, to his credit, responded very quickly to the story, didn't let the story go. Al Jazeera had to back off a little bit on the reporting of that piece that was shown a few weeks for the Super Bowl. And it didn't help their reputation anyway. And, of course, Al Jazeera has decided to pull the plug, and they're going to be going off the air at the end of April. But so far, at least as I said from sports talk that I hear, I'm not hearing much about Manning. I am not, compared to like what's going on with the new pitcher, the new relief pitcher, the New York Yankees, Chapman, and whether or not Major League Baseball is going to suspend him. So if that's the indication around the country, it's not much. It may be a pretty overblown story.
Very interesting. Stuart, I know that, again, advertising is kind of central to what you write about on a regular basis. So as you kind of gaze into the crystal ball looking down the road here, as I am watching, as a lot of people are right now, the people versus O.J. Simpson, it's possible, again, to think back if you're old enough to a time when, hey, O.J. was doing Hertz and all these other things. And, again, I'm certainly not making a comparison there, because it's one thing to double murder two people, allegedly, and it's another thing to have done something horrible. Immature is the best way, face that you could put on it, but really not forgivable, I would say, if indeed it did happen. So thoughts as to whether or not it's going to stick to him, because, again, for the NFL Network to now have gotten involved in potentially suiting him as an analyst or perhaps a game analyst, that perhaps speaks to me about some of the options maybe narrowing a little bit if some of the networks were looking at him previously. What do you think?
Well, I think that he did himself no favors with that really ridiculous behavior that he did after the game, where he kept plugging Budweiser beer over and over again. And that really sort of took me that took me aback, but more so I was surprised by the amount of commentary that there was on social media about it, where people, not just in the ad business, but like average viewer-type people, were really puzzled and displeased by it. They thought it was really kind of a stunt, and there were like dozens of questions people were asking me. How much did he get paid to say that? Because people are so cynical now that as soon as anybody mentions a brand name for any reason in this world today, the people jump to the conclusion that there's some sort of a paid placement involved. My understanding is that he does own some minority ownership of some Budweiser distributorships, which may be why he said that. But I was really surprised that it got such negative reactions from people, and it seemed that in a funny way he was sort of wiggling out of any kind of problems from the Al Jazeera coverage, and then he sort of, you know, he managed to jump over that ditch, but then he dug one for himself right after the game with those Budweiser mentions, and then fell face first into yet another ditch here with this coverage of this situation that he allegedly faced 20 years ago. But
yeah,
you know, my feeling is when they bring up the problems that different athletes have in terms of their careers or their personal lives and how that's going to affect their endorsement contracts. You know, there's a million athletes. There's a billion athletes on the earth. It's not like there's some, you know, terrible shortage of celebrity athletes and that one particular guy or girl in terms of their problems on or off the field is going to be some problem that keeps Madison Avenue up at night. If Joe Schmo turns out to be a child beater or a wife beater or wears a wife beater or whatever, there's about another 199 million other athletes to turn to shower the money, endorsement money on. So, you know, what happens to Peyton Manning and his career, I don't think really has much of a long-term, I mean, for those people who liked him or used to like him, clearly this is going to be something that is going to concern them. But, you know, what happens to him as a result of some of this negative publicity that he's gotten lately? There's plenty of other football players and soccer players and baseball players and rugby players and all these other kind of guys and women who athletes who can fit the bill, jump in and fill his shoes.
That is an amazing point.
Keep in mind that Peyton is a spokesperson for Nationwide Insurance. He's also the chief face of Papa John's, along with the owner, Papa John himself, and that in the weeks before the Super Bowl, and I believe the day of the Super Bowl, there was a ton of ads for both companies with Manning involved. You would think that if this new story has traction, or if there's acknowledgement that, in fact, what is being alleged happened, I would think both Papa John and Nationwide would not only suspend those deals, wipe them clean with Manning, they would also go public with the fact they did it.
Well, first of all, he's really tied up very heavily with Papa John. He's like he has an ownership stake, I think, in the company. The other point is that with the football season over, you're not going to see any football players in any ads now for several months. So this has gone into a state of suspended animation. So the absence or presence of the commercials, with or without him, I don't think has any significance at this time in terms of he's getting a bill of health from his advertiser partners or not. I think that with the when the Super Bowl ends, when the Super Bowl's over, that's the curtain comes down on seeing football players and ads for 99% of America until like, you know, until August or September.
Well, and again, my closing note on any of this is to follow up on what you had said, Stuart, as far as other places that advertising agencies could go. I have long felt that the advertising agencies were missing out in terms of the NHL. I don't know how anybody didn't think that the Sedin twins, for example, were more marketable because, again, you know, you don't have that phenomenon in any other sport. Twin brothers who are that great at what they do, or more at this point, I guess.
Well, the Lopez brothers in the NBA now.
Well,
maybe they're not superstars.
Not quite. Well, Brooke when he's healthy, Robin, not so much. But no, I hear you. I mean, that's a nice try, but
I agree. Hockey's an untapped. Maybe because they wear helmets or maybe because there were so many Canadians. But I think that particularly among younger consumers, I think that sport is ripe for being the next big place for advertisers to look for very mediagenic spokespeople.
And now it's baseball. I use my dad as a perfect example of this. If somebody's mainstream, if my dad's heard of them. My dad heard of Maddox and Bonds and all of them, but, I mean, how is somebody like Paul Goldschmidt not marketable as hell? I don't really understand that. You got a guy that's like 6'8", that can hit the ball 600 feet, and, you know, I just, for the life of me, I don't understand how these the great players of today who are as great as the previous generation and I'd say better in some instances like Mike Trout and Bryce Harper are as anonymous to the mainstream as they are. But I guess
I think it's because of the fact that football has supplanted baseball as America's pastime. And,
decisively, yes.
Their reflexive knee-jerk reaction is to immediately turn to look for a football star to run and to be in their ads rather than somebody from baseball.
It's just jarring that all these guys could basically be in the witness protection program. You know, I mean, the best of the best in this sport, guys. I'm telling you, I don't. That's one of the big mysteries of life, and we're not going to solve that today. But I mean, the great baseball stars of today are not mainstream, basically.
Joke. You know, how come Jacob DeGrom isn't in some shampoo commercial?
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
what is his
incredible hairstyle.
What is Madison Bumgarner, if not the catfish hunter of today, when you're looking at the great country boy, you know, pitchers? You know, I can go on and on about this. I don't understand how that has gotten to be the case, but that might be a fun topic for us in the future. Maybe we could devote a show and look into that. But regardless, it's always a pleasure getting together with you two fine fellows from Media Village, of course. Stuart Elliott and Simon Applebaum. And Simon, as well as your blog being a Media Village and the link to, of course, your show, I believe it's also available, you have said, on New York television as well.
Yes. Well, first of all, tomorrow I'll be televised on Mondays and Fridays at 3 o'clock Eastern. That's on the West Coast here on Blog Talk Radio. And coming up on Friday, we will have the producers of ABC's new sitcom, The Real O'Neills, which premieres next week. Getting over the controversy over one of the characters that deals with eating disorders, anorexia nervosa to be specific, and it's already getting a lot of buzz on Facebook about that. We also have to have, by the way, somebody from a brand new network aimed at Native Americans called All Nations Network. Chris Fire, the independent filmmaker behind Smoke Signals, who's done some episodes of Friday Night Live, so he's had a little bit of sports drama in his background, is involved with the channel, and we may have him on the show on Friday. And also, we're on locally here in New York, BK Live. It's the weekday noon talk Friday hour about Brooklyn Beyond on DIRECT TV. You can catch it in New York on Verizon Fios, anywhere in New York City, on all the cable systems in New York. And it's also posted the next day on YouTube at youtube.com/DIRECT TV. And, of course, you can also read my Tomorrow Be Televised columns and Stewart's columns as well at mediavillage.com, no matter where you are. So please pay attention and tune in.
Thank you both so much. Really appreciate it. Hope to do this again sometime soon. Thank you, gentlemen.
we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.